Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
You know my work and you've given it a lot of thought, and I don't normally get such good questions, to be honest.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
Best when these things just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight too.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I truly, I love it.
You're listening to Words and Nerds Podcast with Danny V. You're listening to Words and Nerds, and today I talk to Jessica Detman. Jessica is a Sydney-based writer and performer. Her blog, Life with Gusto, turns a sharp but affectionate eye on modern parenthood. Today, however, we talk about her novel, How to Be Second Best. Ben Elton describes the book as a sparkling and heartwarming read. What happens when you cast the crown of perfection aside and dare to aim for second best? Enjoy this episode.
Welcome, Jessica. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Danny.
I can't wait to talk about How to Be Second Best. It was such a fun read.
I'm very pleased you thought so. I had a good time writing it.
Now, not only has the book been compared with the work of Marianne Keyes meets Alison Pearson, Ben Elton writes on the front, "Detman is a fine comic writer, sparkling and heartwarming reading." Does it get any better than Ben Elton writing on your book cover?
I pretty much don't think it does. That was absolutely extraordinary having him say that about my work. And it came about because a few years ago, well, I met him many years ago when I was working in publishing. And a few years ago, just before I started to write fiction, when I was at home with little kids and just feeling like I had no idea where I was going with my life, I was writing a parenting blog that was funny, but I didn't know what to do with it. And I saw in a news article that he was in town, and I sent him just a totally random email to see if his old email address worked and said, "Here's my blog, this is what I'm doing." And he remembered me, he read my blog, and he became a really generous and supportive mentor. So that was just a very strange thing to have happen.
That's amazing, though. And I guess sometimes when someone you admire becomes that mentor for you, it just changes everything about your career, doesn't it?
It does, and it really, it just bumped my confidence up massively. You know, I've just been a fan of his work since childhood, and so in the dark moments of trying to write a book, I would look back at what he had written to me about my work and go, well, it can't all be completely terrible if he said that.
Absolutely. I'd carry it around with me in my wallet or maybe tattoo it on my...
I had it printed on a book cover.
Yeah, well, that's right. But, you know, I think I'd need to, like, I don't know, maybe tattoo it on my wrist or something whenever I'm having a bad day.
I'm sparkling and heartwarming.
Sparkling
and heartwarming.
Ben Elton said it. It must be true. You explore the idea in the novel of not only feeling like second best, but the idea that it's okay to not always be the best. And I think it's such a good reminder when we're all striving for some weird kind of perfection.
Yeah, I found that a really interesting thing to explore because I've never felt like I'm in any way perfect. But it has been pointed out to me that I have perfectionist tendencies. and I just sort of dismissed that immediately because I thought, but perfectionists are perfect. But of course they're not. They're really imperfect and flawed, and they just try a lot and beat themselves up a lot. And I wanted to look at a character who does that but is trying very hard to believe that she doesn't have to be the best, even though everything around her and everybody around her is making her feel like she does need to do the best. And I think having kids can bring that out in you. It certainly did for me. Made me feel like, you know, these children need everything I need to do, absolutely all I can for them, give them the best start. And that's completely set at odds with how tired you are.
Yes.
I just think those things, they don't work together. You can't you can't be perfect for your kids, and you really can't teach them to be perfect, because it's not ultimately a very good thing in the long term.
Yeah, and I just think you just articulated perfectionism absolutely to a T, you know, because it's not about being perfect. It's just about that struggle to think that you need to be all the time. And it's just so damaging. I mean, I've experienced that in my life as well.
I think we all do. I mean, I think it starts really early too. Like, I see it in my kids, and I see it in everybody around me. Everyone thinks they're not doing enough and not being good enough all the time.
And, it's exhausting.
You know, there certainly are people who aren't doing a good enough job, mostly the ones in positions of extreme power, but the rest of us are okay.
I did read actually something that says that if you're full of self-doubt, you're actually always trying to learn and trying to do better, and it's much better than being one of those overconfident people to think that they've got it all together.
Oh, well, that's nice to know.
Yeah, I just cling to that, you know.
Yeah.
Now, you touch on social media and the strange culture of influencers. And do you think that some of this need for perfection stems from viewing people's so-called perfect lives on social media? I always blame social media for everything.
Oh, me too. Even though it's my favorite, my favorite thing in the whole world.
You'll see, I'm always tweeting, but I'm always commenting on the effect it has on our lives.
there's a new book out called How Social Media is Ruining Your Life, and it's had massive success because it's being marketed through social media.
The irony.
Yeah. I really think that that doesn't help people with, you know, perfectionist issues, because you used to only be able to compare yourself to a small group of people that you know and see around you, and now you can compare yourself with anybody anywhere in the world at any time who live completely different lives and have different expectations placed upon them. It's amazing how many people you can find yourself not measuring up against when you're on social media.
I feel like the 80s was just such a easier time to be in.
In the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that too. It makes me feel old.
Oh, the nostalgia for the 80s. Yeah. I always slip that in wherever I can.
No, I agree. The 80s was great, especially if you were at primary school in the 80s.
I know,
primary
right?
school now, yeah. Totally different.
Yeah, the freedom you had, right? My kids are never going to get that freedom. Never.
No, they can't, because we know too much now.
Yep, correct. I'm interested, though, to see how they will parent, you know, because we were free and now we're helicopters. What is this generation? How are they going to parent? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I mean, will it just go full circle and they'll be letting their children, you know, base jump from anything they want?
That's
probably.
Right. Probably. Oh, well, that's their problem. They'll have to deal with that.
And we'll just have to be the over-anxious grandparents.
That's right. That's right.
Helicopter grandparenting.
That's it. One of the things I most enjoyed in the book was the family dynamics between our protagonist, Emma, her ex-husband, and his new wife. And as a society, we really try to navigate these things, but sometimes, as is present in your book, it's just so hard.
It is. It's terribly hard. I'm not divorced, but over the last few years, I've watched lots of people that I know and love separate from people that they, especially people that they have kids with, and it just seems to be a completely different ballgame from breaking up in the old, you know, in the olden days when we're all in our 20s and people were just coming and going from relationships. It's so hard to raise a kid, I think, without bad mouthing your ex to them. But I know so many people, and that's what they're trying to do, and it's playing a really, really long game. Because you have to be, you know, you have to rise above, you have to go high when they go low, and realize and be a bad cop too. And I think for lots of women, often women who are the primary carers, as Emma is in my book, you have to be the boring parent who does all of the homework and the vegetables, and you know, the less custodial parent often gets to be the Disneyland parent. And I just don't know how anyone can do that. It's really hard.
Yeah, it's like when the kids stay at grandma's, right? You know, they get to do everything. And then they come home and they're like, you have to brush our teeth,
you're
and
so
we have to
mean.
Go to bed. So boring. I'm like, oh, if you lived at grandma's, it'd be the same thing.
Exactly right. Somebody's got to do that.
That's right. That's actually really important. Brushing your teeth is so important. No, it's absolutely true. And I think you navigated these things really well because there are so many different family dynamics, you know, that we're all dealing with at the moment. And I thought how complex, not only having that situation and having, you know, the two young children of the same age and then living in the same street, like how do you get away from them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I actually don't know anyone with a situation like that, but I just wanted to amplify what it would be like, I think, if you had managed to leave a relationship only to have it basically follow you. Yeah. And that thing about how it's best to do what's best for your kids. Mm. That's what everybody always says about breakups, but that's not always best for the parents.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because that's that real balancing edge of course, it's got to be best for the kids. But if you're unhappy and you're stressed, that's also not best for the kids.
And you have to continually see someone who made you really unhappy.
Yeah, constantly. Yeah. On Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram or just outside your window.
That's right. You know, never get away. Now, love is such a driving force in this book, but the characters, they're so confused about love and who they love. Troy says, love doesn't make sense and believes that love is something that happened to him. What do you make of his theory?
Oh, look, it's a very convenient theory for Troy. So, yeah, Troy is Emma's ex-husband who announces to her just after their second child is born that he has fallen wildly in love with his Pilates teacher and that they too have just had a baby a couple of weeks earlier. And he tells her that he didn't think you could love two people, but it turns out you can. And he likens it to the way when you have one baby, you think, I can't ever have a second baby. There's no way I could love anyone as much as I love this baby. But if you do have a second baby, of course you love them. And he tries to use this argument on Emma to say that, yes, I still love you, but I also love Helen in the same way we love both our children. And it's a clever argument, but I think that as a rational adult, you can choose what you do with feelings of love. You know, your only option is not to have an affair and another child, which seems to be the decision that Troy has made. So generally, maybe you can love lots of people at once, but you can't be with them all.
Yeah, it's a very interesting theory and convenient theory, and I just wanted to just to explore that because I thought it was interesting because it's very convenient for him, but it was funny too, and you know, that's what I liked about the novel. It dealt with some very serious issues, but there was such comedy in the book as well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, you've got to laugh, don't you? it is hard stuff, but the only way through life is to try and see the funny side, I think.
Exactly. Now, the novel explores parenting in only a way that a parent could explore, I think. And there's often some very funny things that happen, but it also shows the real challenges of it too. Not just bringing up the kids, but the external pressures such as homework. And I love how Emma says, his projects involve more engineering knowledge than is required to build an Olympic velodrome. And I feel like you just really capture the life of a parent.
Yeah, well, like we were saying before, I'm looking back at the 1980s primary public education and maybe with rose-tinted glasses, but it just felt like our kids have to do so much more than we did. I feel like the curriculum's really come on. We seem to do very little in primary school. And, you know, their homework's really hard. My kids are in year one and year three and maths is now done in an entirely different way than we learnt it. So we've got to learn new strategies in order to help our children with their homework. So I'm finding all of that a bit much. So sad how play has disappeared, you know. Yeah. And if you're in a position to send your kid to a preschool that's full of play, then that's great and they'll get a few years of that. But not everybody is. And then once they're into the primary school education system, there's not much more play happening,
yeah.
I think.
I just wanted to explore the character of Emma a little bit because I feel like you captured the loneliness of parenting, particularly through the eyes of a single parent, really, really well. And I don't think it's something that, you know, we see a lot of or there's much, I don't know, empathy for because we're so busy. And even Emma says, you know, everyone kind of, you know, is weird about her being a single parent because there are perceptions of single parents. And I just thought it was such an interesting insight that we often may not think about.
Yeah, and, you know, there's some parts of that I've really exaggerated, you know, about people in the her neighbourhood regarding her as something of a threat. You know, I certainly don't feel like that about any of the single parents I know. But I do know that single parents get left out socially in a lot of cases. Couples don't invite single people often in the same way they would easily invite another couple to hang out. I see that that's so lonely. And just not having somebody there who you can throw around parenting ideas with in the same way you can with a good partner. Not all partners are useful for that, I'm sure. But I do see that among people I know, that it becomes very difficult when you've got kids and you're on your own to have any way of judging what you're doing and having somebody else look at you objectively but lovingly to help you with that parenting journey. And Emma certainly experiences that.
And sometimes it's just another perspective, isn't it? Because sometimes you're just so locked in, you know, what you might think and what's gone on, and it's really nice to go, hey, what do you think? And they often, sometimes, open up, you know, a new idea and like, oh, I never would have thought of that. So it is, it's that bouncing ideas, which, you know, must be very exhausting when you're just doing everything yourself.
On your own. And also I think certainly with my partner, it makes me pause often in decision making with the kids. So I don't instantly give them an answer to a question that they, you know, when they want something, it makes me go, okay, hang on, no, I'm going to discuss that with your dad. And it's just some thinking time for both of us. Whereas I think if you're on your own, the pressure is there to just give them a straight answer immediately.
Yeah.
And you know, not have any time to actually decide what you want to do and what direction you want to take, because kids throw curveballs at you constantly. You know, they're always coming up with a request or a demand or the answer to something, and it would be great to have a bit of time to sort of cogitate on that. I don't know if it's as easy when you're on your own.
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw this meme the other day actually that said, what is it about when you say no to your child, they still ask you 42,000 times after you've said no?
Yeah, it's like no means no. I have friends who, with their very small child, they used to tell him, you need to take the no. Just take the no.
Take the no and be done with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. There needs to be more synonyms for no.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you have a blog that you were talking about before, Life with Gusto, we were talking about before the interview, and it's been described as a sharp, affectionate eye on modern parenthood. Tell me about this. And did you use some of this for the book?
I didn't use anything directly from the blog for the book, but I started writing the blog about 8 years ago when I had a 6-7 month old baby, and she was not a napper, but I started to write, you know, 40 minute bursts of just stuff about her and our life, and posted it as a blog, and it just immediately made me feel better, and I shared it with friends on Facebook, and it really seemed to strike a chord, because I was being very, very honest about what it was like. And it was pretty fun to whinge, because, you know, if you've got a non-sleeping baby, that you have plenty of material for whinging about your child. And so I've kept that up for about 8 years. But at the moment I'm sort of at a phase where I'm not sure what I'm going to do with the blog, because my kids can now read. They now know about the internet. I did have to tell them about the blog about a year ago and explain to them that, yes, they are. I have written about them extensively, but I've tried really hard never to write anything that would be embarrassing, and I've never used their photos or their real names on it. But still, their stories are not necessarily mine to tell anymore. So that was one of the reasons for moving into fiction.
That's really interesting, having, you know, that different perspective on the blog, because your children can now read and access the internet. That's a really interesting take on it.
Well, it was pretty sudden, because one day they both came home from school with something called an internet contract. And because they were starting to use the internet at school, they were told to, you know, we had to discuss all these issues with them and make sure they understood that they weren't allowed to bully people and upload photos and sext each other and all sorts of stuff. And we had to sit down, and our kids didn't know anything. They kept saying, well, what's Facebook? We know you have Facebook. We don't know what it is. And what's Instagram? And what do you mean you're putting pictures of us on the internet? And do you have, you know, what are you doing with Facebook? And we had to actually sit down and say, well, yes, we put pictures of you on Facebook. And then the first picture that my daughter asked me about was one of her in a sink as a baby having a bath. And she said, is that picture on the internet? And I 100% lied to her.
Nope.
And then immediately went and took it down from Facebook.
Wow, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So really we all needed to be thinking about our internet contract.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, you're excited about your kids and they're cute, but, yeah, you wonder what they think when they get older and they're all over the internet.
That's right.
Oh, and it's tricky.
Yeah, I mean, my brother has no social media and there are no pictures of his children on the internet anywhere. And he seems to be sticking to that. And I haven't been able to do that, but I have tried to keep them only to people I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it? It's a minefield. I don't know what to even think about it. It stresses me out just thinking about it.
I know. But at least, you know, there's no bare bums.
Yeah, well, that's right. No bare bums. Yeah. Now, your writing process, what is that like? Are you a person who plots out your story and, you know, doesn't veer much from it, or do you pants your way through it? Are you somewhere in between?
I'm somewhere in between those two. Certainly with this book, I had a fairly sure arc of where I was going to end up, but I didn't know how I was going to get there. I knew where Emma was going to begin and roughly where she would end, but I didn't quite know who she would meet along the way and how those things would turn out. So in that sense, I pantsed it. And it was a very interesting process.
But I often hear that if you have an ending, you will get there. You know, if you know where you're going, you can get there. It's if you don't sort of know where it's going to end, that's where you get yourself into trouble. Would you find that true?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a little bit where I am with the second book at the moment. I have all the characters and I have a large part of the story, but I don't know what's going to happen to them all at the end. And I think once I get that, it will hopefully come together a lot more quickly.
Yeah. It must be a process of, you know, terror, but also surprising yourself as well.
Yeah, it is fun. I have a quote up in my little study at home that's a Robert Frost quote, I think, that says, no surprise in the writer, no surprise in the reader. No tears in the writer, no tears in the reader.
Yeah.
So that I like to try and remind myself of that.
Absolutely. So you are starting to write your second novel. Can you tell us anything about it?
Yes, it's about a family, and in particular it's about a mother and a daughter and their expectations of each other. And it looks a bit at women and their hopes and dreams and the point at which they think that there's no more chance to fulfill dreams and the way they help each other with them. The daughter is expecting a lot of childcare from the mother, and the mother has just reached the end of her caring years, in her opinion, and is not really prepared for that. So, and that's something I'm also seeing around me with friends and parents, which is women my age wanting a lot of help from their parents and their parents really being at a point where they'd like to do less of that, which is entirely fair enough.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, childcare, as we know, it's difficult, it's expensive, and a lot of people do rely on their parents. I mean, I rely on my parents a lot too, but thankfully they tell me they enjoy it. I hope they're not lying to me.
No, I'm sure they're not. But I wanted to look at a person who very much loves her grandchildren, but also doesn't want to be there.
Yeah,
because 3 day a week carer.
Yeah, because there's a sense of freedom, isn't there? Once you've brought your children up, and you know you're over all that kind of, you know, 30-ish angst or whatever, and you're beyond that, and there's a sense of freedom that you are entitled to enjoy in those 60 plus years or whatever.
I think you really are, and it looks unpleasant for me, to the idea that you'd have to be dragged back into that early childhood.
Yeah, stage.
Although maybe it feels different when you're in your 60s and you see your own children's children.
Yeah, maybe there just needs to be a bit of a balance. I don't know.
Yeah,
but it's definitely an interesting perspective, because I know just from reading statistics and things that grandparents are very much part of the caring of the grandchildren these days. Well, that sounds really interesting, and I'm very interested to read that. Is that going to be we're looking at 2020?
Yeah, sometime 2020, I think, is the plan.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to reading it. Look, thank you so much for spending some time with me today, Jessica. How to Be Second Best was such an enjoyable read. It took me out of reality with its humour and exploration of marriage and children, and I just enjoyed it so much. So thank you for chatting to me about it.
Oh, it was a great pleasure. Thanks, Danny.